The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Colombia, not as it were in Bogota. I am up in Mompos at the moment, but we will be recording this interview coming up, episode 145, with Roberto Uribe, and he is in Berlin, Germany. So quite a long distance there. It's been a momentous week, hasn't it? It's been a really momentous week, a final ceasefire. Well, let's say that the groundwork for a final ceasefire signed with the FARC on the same day as the Brexit vote. So an emotional day for me, really, because not only my adopted country, my home country, is taking significant steps forward towards peace. And now, of course, that's a ceasefire that has been done with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, with the FARC, not with the ELN. So there remain problems, and there remain people in opposition, and rightly so, because a healthy democracy is one in which there is debate, and a strong opposition helps, let's say, the people in power establish what it is they need to do. It may not be perfect, it may not be completely right, but at the same time, these are paces being taken in the right direction to try and bring to an end Colombians killing Colombians, bullets killing Colombians, and so on. And yes, there are problems, and we could speak for hours about the problems. We could speak for hours and hours, but we need to think about the positives. If there are 8,000 combatants of the FARC who then demobilize, and let's say 40%, 50%, 60% of these are successfully reintegrated into society, that is a huge number, not out there involved in illicit drugs. They're not involved in killing. They're not involved in maiming, in kidnapping. It's a big step. I know there's all sorts of debates around wages and impunity and prison time and so on and so forth, but we're going in the right direction. That's not to say that there aren't issues to debate, and I hope to be able to get someone on the show sooner rather than later so we can talk about this and we can talk about what is going to happen in Colombia. I'm up here in Mompos, and a lot of people think that we're handing over the country to the guerrilla and that this is going to become Venezuela. I highly doubt that this will happen. But it's a very exciting time, to be here in Colombia and observing what is going on and what is going forward. And I am seeing this reflected in the numbers of people coming to Colombia. I've received emails from San Francisco this week. I've received emails from New York. I've received emails from the UK. It's really very exciting. More and more people are coming down. And so as I say that, if you are thinking of coming to Colombia, if you don't have a set plan, please look up www.columbia4u.com. If you decide to sign up for one of their tours, of course, put in the code ColumbiaCallingForYou and you will receive a discount. So ColumbiaCallingForYou is your discount code on Colombia for you. What else have I got in the pipeline? Well, some of you who follow us on the Facebook page or on Twitter, that's Colombia Calling, will know that I have a crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo.com. The idea is to promote and create a quality magazine long form. Long form so that we can write real articles, properly investigated articles in an annual edition called Columbia Calling Magazine. It's on Indiegogo. We are moving forwards. There are just over 30 to 40 days left in the campaign. It's going ahead slowly, but it's going ahead in the right idea, in the right way. So if any of you think about it, the 8,000 plus of you out there downloading per week this this podcast, if the 8,000 of you, all of you donated $1.50, we would be well above our target audience. But the idea is that perhaps you would donate a little bit more and receive an edition, the first ever edition of the Columbia Calling magazine. So please think about donating to this. So just go to indiegogo.com and look for Columbia Calling and you'll find it. Or look on the Facebook page or on Twitter, because I'm being a bit of a pest promoting this. But I really want to make this happen, and I want to showcase photographers, artists, and new writers, perhaps unknown but high-quality voices out there who want to tell the story of Colombia. Good, bad, indifferent, but telling the real story around Colombia. And what better time than this? What better time than this when peace dialogues, which began in November 2012, are actually yielding fruits. Now, you may be in disagreement with this, but they are yielding fruits. And, you know, I think that the final thing is, do we want to be in a country which is continually in a long-term, maybe low intensity, but a long-term conflict, and all of the issues that surround that, the displacement, the broken homes, the broken families, the robbery of lands, these criminal gangs? No, we have to move forwards. So without further ado, I'm going to take a short break, but we'll be back with Roberto Uribe, and we're talking about Calle 22. Calle 22 is his project, and it was an intervention, an artistic intervention into one of Bogota's most infamous streets. So we'll be talking to Roberto Uribe very shortly on the line from Berlin, talking about this intervention and why this was important, and what Calle 22, Street 22, what this represents, not only to Bogota, but to Colombia as a whole. So I'm actually very impressed and proud of this episode 145, because it's a very interesting and insightful episode. And I know that you out there will enjoy it too. So continue to download, continue to subscribe. We are on Stitcher, iTunes, and SoundCloud now. So you can find us on almost every platform. Share the word about the campaign, please. And of course, if you're coming to Colombia, colombia4u.com. And that your code is Columbia Calling for you. So thank you again for listening. Thank you for listening at this momentous time for Colombia. I am positive. I know it's not without its faults, but I am positive. And this is something that I want to explore in our Columbia Calling magazine. So that's what I'm hoping for, you know, the input from you guys and all of you out there thinking of perhaps donating. Donate a little bit, but also put your... But, you know, write us an email. Say what you would like to see in the magazine. What would be interesting to you as a Colombiaphile, as someone looking to come to Colombia, or who is Colombian living overseas, or even in Colombia, or an expat, or beyond. But I'm going to take a break now, and we'll be back with Roberto Uribe. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and thank you for listening to this episode 145.
Reflection about, like, why is that happening? Why is this going on in Bogota? So I thought that was a key thing of the project, and I decided to think about that with more people,
right?
Instead of just doing one solo show.
Well, yeah, it's almost too much for a solo show when we talk about the Calle 22 in Bogota. This is, as you listed on your website, is 2.5 kilometers long, and it represents everything. I mean, for you as an architect, someone who works in land use, who works in public space, with this knowledge of the urban reality and Colombian situation, I mean, it represents everything, doesn't it? I mean, when we look at Calle 22, I think of it as you know, I think of the 26, obviously the 26, which runs down to the airport, the Avenida El Dorado, which has been obviously under construction for years now with the Transmilenio and all of that stuff, and it's just finally being opened up. But when the city collapses, the 26 collapses, you know. So the 22, the 22, you know, four blocks to the south, so slightly more towards the center, really, it's like a catchment area for everything, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's very important what you're mentioning about like being parallel to the Calle 26.
Yeah.
Because when we decided to take the Calle 22 against like choosing a plaza or something like that kind of typical urban spaces, was because the Calle 22 is one of the few streets in the city center of Bogota that crosses all the way from the mountains deep into the savannah.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the few streets that still does that.
Yeah.
But also, it's like a backside of the main street of Calle 26. You have all the main buildings and, like, let's say, institutional presence on that street.
Mm-hmm.
So we like the idea to tell stories that are not necessarily so they don't play maybe this important role, yes, but mm-hmm. I would like to say like this main character in a movie. But nevertheless, they're very key to Colombian history.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in Calle 22 somehow.
So what do when for our listeners a little bit, our listeners, you know, those who are not so familiar with Bogota, what kind of buildings and what kind of society are we looking at on Calle 22, 22nd Street?
Well, what is so peculiar of Calle 22 is that, like you mentioned, 2.5 kilometers that have everything.
Mm-hmm.
It starts up in the hills with Quinta Bolívar,
yeah,
which is today a museum. And it has a historical relevance for the whole country, and I would say part of the continent itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, and ends up in the Plaza de Palo Quemado, which is one of the main markets for the city. And in between, you have a sequence of buildings from theaters, like such as Faenza,
yeah,
that makes reference to, also because the site of Faenza was previously a factory for China.
Huh.
You have Las Torres de Fericia, that is today one of the, like, a very important urban development for housing in the city center,
mm-hmm,
but was previously a factory for glass.
Yeah.
You have the Teatro Mexico, you have universidades, like University of Los Andes, that Universidad Central. You have also, there were like very present, the television industry was between Carrera Tercera and Carrera Quinta. There was like in Revision and a lot of other things going on.
So I didn't know that about the television at all, because of course they've all moved from there, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it, and even like if you go really back into history, for example, like during the colony,
yeah,
the Barrio Las Nieves, which is one of the neighborhoods that these streets cross,
mm-hmm,
it was a neighborhood of artists.
Yeah,
some of the main churches have some paintings that were made in this area of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a palimpsest. It's all kind of stories and all kind of buildings from different scale that can go from very local importance to nationwide importance.
And, so
and that's in,
yeah,
in 2.5 kilometers.
I love this. I love the way you've taken that really important historical building, of course, the Quinta de Bolívar, which has gone through its problems as well. I mean, you know, it was a quinta given by, let's say, Nueva Granada or Republic to Bolívar, and then became like a, later on, abandoned, and it was like a cerveceria for a while and like a bodega before it was taken back. And in fact, when I took some tourists there not too long ago, The person who was guiding was Venezuelan, who made me think that she was maybe sent by the Bolivarian Revolution to guide there. But that's just a you know, a hearsay. But if you think, you know, when you've got Bolivar and then you've got like the elite education of Los Andes and El Tadeo, because it is, and you know, Los Andes the other day was ranked in the sort of like the, you know, some of the top international universities in the world, and so we get all of the presidential sons and whomever are educated there, and whoever wants to be someone goes to Los Andes, really. And then you go down the hill and you say, and I think it's not so far away, that there's a Protestant church. I think it might be on the 24th Street, but it's interesting because it shows the difference in this tapestry of designs. But when I find it even more interesting is to leave Las Nieves, cross the Septima, and what you see is this sort of, let's say, it would be modernity in the 1950s, you know, those big buildings that are almost a bit brutalistic, you know, almost a little bit heavy, heavy buildings. And then you get down to the Decima, and of course, this is, and beyond that, and then the Caracas, and you see what the Austrian urbanist Karl Brunner has done. He's created that Delmar divide, as they say in Missouri, which is the line between the social strata, and the Avenida de Caracas or the Decima down there really is. It's one of those chasms that separates one side from another, and people who are okay economically with people who are obviously not okay with, and then on this you've got this let's say map on your website on calle22.org. And you can follow it, and you've put the words in the places. It's one of those interesting maps with the words and for locations and so on. And I can see it here. I can see the things. You know, you've written down carros of cars, traffic, buses, get going. I'm sure this must be where there's a Casa de Empeño here, because it says Yo le traigo la plata, a mil. So it must be sort of San Victorino type place, salsa, and then you've got lots of things, and in big letters, cuidado, take care, be careful, which must infer the situation about which I'm talking. You know, the have-nots in Bogota.
Well, actually, the map that you're referring to, it comes out from a workshop that we did with Universidad de Los Andes, actually, the students of architecture.
Nice.
The idea was to bring the students out to the street and to make them realize that a lot of information, a lot of learning can be done on site. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the, let's say, layers that the project has.
Yeah.
It's the academical part.
Yeah.
And what it was so nice to see, it's like the students, they created this different kind of map. That's the one that I selected for the website. Mm-hmm. But they were like detaching themselves from architectural drawings.
Yeah.
And selecting words and colors. And just putting all that onto that street. And yeah, I think it's one of the main things of these exercises, and I think that's one of the things that the street condenses. Is like it's also has been fascinating for over these 4 years going to the street, also with other people, artists that I'm invited to join and to do the interventions. Some of them here from Berlin. Anthropologists from Germany as well came to make part of the project. It's to see that those territories and all those ideas of cuidado and be aware and somehow are deep inside in our minds.
Yeah.
And they become reality. You put them so hard on the
space
that you are making the space dangerous because you don't want to go there because it becomes like what they call in Spanish, imaginario urbano. I don't know if that has been translation to in English, but like a urban imagination or like urban imaginary, something like this.
Yeah, I think we understand exactly this. This is sort of the urban I don't know what you'd say, the landscape, the urban imagination, the imagination. I think we understand it, but it is true that, and you know, I think in more ways than one in Bogota, because the center has had such a traumatic history, you know, you could grow up in, let's say, Cedritos in the north of the city and never go downtown. You know, you just say, no, it's dangerous down there. Lots of rateros. Everyone's going to rob you. It's full of indigentes. It's dangerous. You'd only ever go downtown maybe on a school trip to a museum. And then you'd get off your bus, 10 paces from the door, go into the museum and then not explore. And I think, you know, I know, I study at La Javeriana, and I'm certain that there's some students there who've never been further south than the Javeriana, which is in what, the 34th or something, 35th, something like that, you know, or 43rd Street. So I'm certain of it. Or in the national, let's say, psyche in Colombia, you know, I talked to someone in La Costa on the Caribbean coast. No, for 4 years I lived in the Candelaria. Oy, you know, but how dangerous how is. Well, yeah, okay, in 4 years I had one problem, and it was my own fault because I shouldn't have been walking at that time of day down that street, you know. But it's there is a national, let's say, psyche that instills the fear, you know. It's been there for a long time, like you say, and it comes out in that map too, you know. Cuidado, cuidado, which is probably these kids, like your students from the Los Andes, have never been down to that place, but their parents say, oh no, por abajo de la décima, no.
De la Caracas,
yeah, de la Caracas no te vas, yeah. So I just see it's really interesting. So I guess with this project, not only are you trying to illustrate the diversity of this street, but hopefully change a bit of the image that it has.
I think, Richard, one of the things that was so important for us in the project was to almost rediscover the city by using it.
Yeah.
And the idea of doing art installations in a calle such like Calle 22, mm-hmm. was to try to communicate,
yeah.
and to understand that it's almost like a democratic art, a kind of act, mm-hmm. walking down the streets and feeling that you have the right also to use it and to express yourself temporarily. And that's how the interventions were. They were temporary interventions, because the idea that we had is, you know, breaking a little bit those fears, coming across those fears, and realizing that people that we are afraid of are just another people that might be as afraid of us,
yeah.
the way we are from them. And art became an excuse, or let's put it like a methodology, to have a reason to be there.
Yeah.
To walk down the street constantly, to talk to people, to contact, to let us be in contact as well, because it's sometimes the violence comes from ourselves. You know, that what you're saying, I should not go down the street at that time of the night, but it's like suddenly we are all of us, we do that, and yeah. every city has such a neighborhood
yeah.
that people are afraid to go to. But I think it is important to start realizing that we can change those things ourselves,
yeah.
and by simple acts of using space, public space.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a short break right now. We've gone through this segment, and we'll kind of come back, and we're going to continue talking about this, because it really is basically talking about Bogota and talking about Colombia. You know, located in one street in Bogota, the Calle 22, the 22nd Street. So, listen, please, all of you out there, go and check out the website. That's calle22.org, and read about Roberto Uribe's various projects around the world and what he's gotten up to. But we're going to come right back and continue talking about this really interesting project, one that, of course, to me, that's particularly personal because of my studies. But we'll come right back. This is episode 145 with Roberto Uribe. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling. Please don't go away. La canoa de Bareque, And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota talking to Roberto Uribe, who is in Berlin today. And we're talking about his project. That's calle22.org, 22nd Street in Bogota, which we have been mentioning is really a microcosm for the city as a whole, and indeed for Colombia as a whole, because when you think of this 2.5 kilometers of the street running down from the mountains, as we previously mentioned, as Roberto has told you all, running down from the mountains, and it goes out into the savannah, it really does represent all of Colombia. We've got colonial buildings, not only through the architecture, but through the society. There's colonial buildings, there's a new Republican style, there's even a more sort of Le Corbusier style in there too. You cross through Karl Brunner's designs from the 1930s or early 1940s, if I'm not mistaken, and it's got a bit of everything. But today, we can pinpoint the way that this street represents Colombia, because you even go through areas, and you mentioned off, out of the recording, but you mentioned, Roberto, that you can find even hair salons for people from the Pacific coast. I mean, from Chocoanos or Caucanos or Nariñenses, you can find these areas, which you wouldn't expect to find, right downtown in central Bogota. But
That's one of the things that that I think that the project tried to do.
Yeah.
At some point, it was to deal with the complexity of realities that Colombia is made of. But also, we try to mirror that from a perspective that came from Berlin. Mm-hmm. That's the reason I invited people from the city, because from historical reasons, that the Second World War, First World War, Germans have been dealing through art with this history, and I think Colombia can learn from that too. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I found that all this situations that comes to be noticeable in Calle 22, such as this, places for haircuts that are from people that come from the Pacific coast of Colombia, that somehow had to be reflected and brought to discussion through projects.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit.
No, but I understand. And it's also, like you say, it's a very interesting point, this about Berlin and about Germans, let's say, from the contemporary past. It's a healing process, isn't it? It's going through the art, working out the history. And as you say, as you rightly mentioned, I hadn't thought of it, but Colombia can learn from this, because, I mean, we're talking of, well, Miguel Samper in the last interview said 200 years of bloodshed, officially, it's since 1964, but equally it is really 200 years of bloodshed. It's a lot of time that needs to somehow be reconciled in the Colombian national psyche, and if you look at Calle 22, it's a perfect image of everything, because you've got, I mentioned previously, you've got the elites, you've got the middle class area. I mean, really, but some of the middle class have escaped. They've gone further up north, but you've got bohemian areas in there. You've got that modernity in there from the 1950s. You've got the unfortunate areas of Las Ollas, obviously the drug consumption areas. You've got the prostitution of all types, and then you go down into more industry, and then out into the expansion of Bogota. So if you look at the Calle 22, it's everything that needs to be reconciled, and in particularly with people displaced from the countryside, because they are representing every different department really in Colombia. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah. There is something about what you're mentioning. It's the idea of reconcile. Mm-hmm. That was for me key in the idea of conceiving the project.
Uh-huh.
And it's the public that you talk to who are projects that looks to reconcile.
Yeah.
It's not that they're not artists busy and looking into this topic already for many, many years before. But the fact that you take the art to the street, it's an action. It's looking for this dialogue with others.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's people from the university, the Los Andes or La Tadeo, that maybe they know a lot about this topic and they can see them in museums or galleries. But people from El Barrio Santa Fe not necessarily do that.
No.
And believe me, some of them do. I was surprised because I got all these ideas that they absolutely don't. But some of them do.
Yeah.
And the fact to put art pieces all along these 2.5 kilometers and to become aware of that, it's a very reconciling.
Sure.
And it is opening the space for that, you know?
That's right. They're reclaiming the open space. I want to ask, when exactly did you do this, the art exhibitions?
Well, the interventions took place at the end of September 2015 till the 4th of October.
Okay.
There were only 5 days
that
it was the exhibition, let's say, on the actual space.
Yeah.
Then we make a show more of about the documentation, the videos, the photographs that were taken of those days. Y Plataforma Bogotá, that was the month of March.
Okay. When you were planning this and when you were deciding where to put these art installations along the Calle 22, how was the reception by the local people? Because it's these are tough areas, you know. How, when they saw you coming down there and saying, we would like to do this, how, I'm sure you consulted with the local people because, you know, this is their home and this is their workplace. But how did they react to your presence and the presence of your collaborators?
Well, that's something that change along the process is the idea of the locals.
Yeah.
Because as we have been mentioning over and over, it's so diverse.
Yeah.
That there's not one kind of locals. So every time that you have to do a piece, between the Carrera Tercera and Quinta, it was completely other locals. Mm-hmm. Than what you're like doing from Caracas to Carrera 17.
Yes.
And that, now that we're producing the catalog and writing about it, became as one of the main things of the project is how to negotiate this space. Where do I have the right to do it? Mm-hmm. And when do I really have to start negotiating and with whom? Mm-hmm. For example, one of the pieces, made by the artist Felipe Arturo, was called Rio Sombrio. Mm-hmm. The piece was a cloth that was flying right on top of the street and created a shadow on the street itself. Mm-hmm. That was a memory of the river that originally followed that path. Mm-hmm. And one of the funny things about the project is like we needed to hang them from the Poste de la Luz.
Yeah, the lamppost.
Lamppost, exactly. And to figure it out who's the owner of that is not as easy and it's not as obvious as you might think. And believe me, it took me around 5 months to figure it out who was actually the person that I had to talk to.
And who was the person?
Well, the thing is, the light poles are actually owned by a private concern.
Yeah.
But that changes from area to area. So this private concern subletted again to the alcaldía local. But then again, they have to ask someone else for the permit of hanging it.
Yeah.
So it shows the chaos, or what you might think is a chaos in the beginning, has another order. You just have to come across to other set. That is another logic from the one that I was bringing from Berlin.
Yeah, well, you know, in Berlin, you'd go to the, I guess, the electrical company, the public illumination company or whatever, and they'd say, oh, yes, this sector, we ba 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 dum, and you'd probably be able to get the permission online. You know,
or maybe not.
Bogota is a different story. I'm learning all about the legal processes here. I've been here roughly 10 years, and sometimes I just have to step back and take a deep breath and go, okay, it's okay. When the bank says to me that I can't do internet banking because I need to open the internet banking in the actual branch of the bank where I opened my account, and you're like, well, that defeats the whole idea of internet banking because I'm in Bogota and I opened my account in Mompox. Are you expecting me to drive 15 hours to have this to that? And then, you know, you sort of you reason with the people, they see your logic, and then maybe they find someone else you can talk to, and then you just go from process to process, and then suddenly you find the right person. But like you said, it took months, though. You know, it took months for this. I'm also interested when we talk about this, about the people on the street itself. I mean, you've talked about the official side there with the light posts and so on, but the people on the street, because you're interrupting the daily process, the daily activity, wherever you're doing these things. So how was it? I mean, I imagine on the first day you were looked at with real suspicion.
Yes and no. I mean, the funny thing is, like, because of the activities of the street itself that come from radios and electronics at some stages of the street, to drug dealing and some others. Also, do you have great bakeries?
Yeah.
That is fair to be said.
Yeah.
Then, you have all kind of people coming to the street all the time. So, if you look like you know where you're walking to, you have no problem.
Yeah.
And that was something I discovered through this anthropologist that I brought with me, and she was smart enough to taught me that those small things.
Yeah. If you don't look lost, you know, you're not going to be... It's very true. It's very true. If you don't stand out, if you just... You're going about your business, get away. You can belong. It's very interesting indeed. And then over the process, you said it was 5 days, 5 days of interventions. By the end of it, I assume you were accepted, really, there on the streets. You had become a routine figure.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, one of the things, for example, with the piece of one of the German artists, Julius von Bismarck,
yeah,
we did film with a special camera that is a sophisticated camera that shoots 3,000 pictures per second. Mm-hmm. And that has to be filmed in a car that is moving 80 kilometers per hour.
Wow.
It has to be very fast. And for that, we have the help of the police.
Yeah.
To stop the traffic. So the car could, like, run up and down some parts of the street without being interrupted. But then the funny part was, like, after the video was edited here in Germany, and then we made the installation in the place. What we did was to put the same video in every single coffee shop, in every single restaurant that was along the street. So people were watching, you know, like, if you have ever been in Colombia to a restaurant, you will see that almost every single place has a TV.
And it's always turned on.
So the funny thing is that we get in contact with everyone, and everybody was really happy to help.
Mm.
And everybody was playing this video of the same street you were just leaving to get into the restaurant or the cafe. And it was this slow motion camera showing the same street, Calle 22, at night. And so it was nice because then we left the DVDs for people to have it. And I came simply, and I know one of the restaurants, Aceis Manos, keeps on showing it.
Aceis Manos, I know that place. It's like it's almost an art place, isn't it? They do do theater and things. Yeah.
Yeah, a concert. Uh-huh. So the funny thing is, like, they really like embrace parts of the project, and they. I mean, I love the idea. You know, they keep on playing it, and it's a great piece. So I think it belongs to the street. So I'm very happy that one of the places keeps on projecting.
Excellent.
Products of the project.
But I'm fascinated by this. You know, it's almost like you having to drive at 80 kilometers an hour down a Bogota street. I know at nighttime, so it's going to have less traffic. It almost looks like, you know, you're doing it's a carro de pique, you know, a street racing. I think that's, I mean, people must have been just so confused when they first did this. But it must have been fun, because I don't think you can ever get at 80 kilometers an hour in Bogota anywhere. So
I can tell you there was a lot of adrenaline there.
And I don't know. It just sounds crazy to me. So you've done the installations and you've done the exhibitions and so on. But will you be doing them again? Will you be bringing them back to Bogota? Have you got more projects for Bogota?
Right now, we are already very busy doing the catalog.
Yeah.
And I think that the nature of the project, it would be great, as I was mentioning now, that maybe the project grows by itself. Maybe one of the universities picked it up and develops it further. You know, that it grows by its own. Mm-hmm. I think it has the material and it has the possibility to grow on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I will be doing in the near future something again in Bogota. I would be interested in another city like Barranquilla or maybe Cali.
Mm.
I think I would like to change of atmosphere, also to make it a challenge for me, because I'm from Bogota, I was born there, I know the city pretty well. Though every time you go with this kind of place, you discover completely new things. But it would be very interesting for me to do something, and I'm flirting with the idea of something in the Caribbean.
Personally, my feeling would be Barranquilla. Because it's such a fascinating city for the way that it's grown, there is a center officially, but really there is no center, you know. It would be really interesting to be able to pick, like if you were going to do it over a street as well, you know, and you'd have to bring in obviously the colonial aspect, which would be less than in Bogota, I think, and then of course you'd get through the Lebanese immigration, which would be fascinating, and of course the growth of the city in the last 5-6 years, which has been just quite startling. Also, you know, the problem with the arroyos, the big floods when it rains down the streets. I know that they're building sort of channels to try and channel them underneath the streets now, but I think it would be so interesting to do a proper study of Barranquilla that doesn't involve, you know, let's say the group of Barranquilla so much, you know, the literary side, because we know about this. We know about Gabriel García Márquez and we know about La Cueva, but something else to advance the understanding of that city nationally, I think, and within Barranquilla itself would be, yeah, I think that would be really important.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to do something there, and I'm like already having some artists in mind that I would like to bring over. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's just plans, and like they say, you maybe don't talk too much about them because they don't come reality. But Barranquilla maybe was probably one of the places I would like to work in the future.
You could also bring in the railways, because of the history of the railway there. You know, meeting the boats, and then the Scottish immigrants who worked on the railways. I've just been working on I've been working for several years investigating the history of the North. He's from Northern England, but He died in 1943 in Bogota. His name was Jack Greenwell, who was the first ever coach of Santa Fe, the football team in Bogota. But he arrived first in Barranquilla, and he may well have been the founding coach of Junior before it was Junior. And I found his passenger manifests on boats and everything. I mean, it's just fascinating. So that just came out in the press in England, because his hometown, who have forgotten him, the tiny town called Crook in northern England, have now put up a commemorative plaque in the main plaza saying this is the guy. And he was also the coach of Barcelona for like 16 years, you know. So, but he died in Bogota of a brain hemorrhage.
You see, those histories of Colombia are fascinating. Mm. I don't know if you have read the book Pa Que Se Acabe La Vaina.
I know the book. I have not read it. Yes, I know the book you're talking about.
Really good for understanding another way of Colombian history being told. It's like another parallel way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And one of the things that is mentioned in the book, it's that Bogota and Colombia wasn't present in the global map till the 80s.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But it was always somehow coming across like very important things and very important people. Karl Brunner, that you mentioned before about Cache 22, one of the main architects from Austria that came into Bogota and did amazing things there. Like, I remember when I was studying in Bogota architecture, there were like floods of students from Austria, from Vienna, coming to Bogota to photograph El Parkway, La Raqueta en el Bosque Izquierdo. There is a little part of like in Carrera 17 with Calle 22, which is the first how you say, separador de árboles, like
Path. Let's say a pathway with trees or something. Yeah,
exactly. That ever was built in Colombia. And now that you're telling me about this, I find it absolutely fascinating. I mean, like, that material that you're told about, it's like it's a whole project. It could be a whole project itself.
Well, I think that's the thing. I think this comes back to the original point, and I think at the end of it, our issue, I say this as, you know, I've taken on Colombia as my home, 10 years, etc. But the issue is that of identity here and a collective past, which does not seem to be understood, you know. Everything has been completely consumed by, let's say, the violence and the contemporary history of Colombia, that we don't know about these little histories that can give let's say, smaller corners of Colombia, a different identity and a different feeling and maybe a sense of belonging. It's something that I think I really have been struggling to come to terms with here. You know, I've been coming here, or I first started coming here in 1998. You know, and you talk about Colombia and everything, you know, always the usual conversations come up, you know, cocaine, war, etc., Escobar, now it's narcos or whatever like that. But there are so many other things that could help alter that, you know, by just rescuing these histories. Like we said, the Scottish in Barranquilla, when nobody remembers, the, like you're saying, in the Calle 22, when we cross, who outside of architecture really knows about Karl Brunner? Very few people, really. Who knows? How many people know in truth that Le Corbusier was here in Bogota? These things need to be rescued. And so this is why when I started studying your page a bit more and the project, I'm like, this I like, because I can see, you know, I can see what you're trying to do here. I can see Calle 22, you know, I know Calle 22. I haven't walked the whole thing yet. I think I'm maybe a little bit too white to go to some parts of it. Maybe a little bit too white.
Next time I go to Bogota, I'll take you there.
Okay, fine. But you've got your... You have your connections. I can go as far as a certain thing. Otherwise, I'll get told off by my Colombian wife. But I think it's very interesting indeed. And so let me just take this minute to say, listen, thank you so much for your time. It's been a fun and informative chat. And I really want to direct people to your website. So that's Calle, if you don't understand. That's C-A-L-L-E, as in street, Calle 22, so 22.org. And the guy leading it is Roberto Uribe. We've been talking for this episode 145 of Columbia Calling. Roberto, thank you so much for your time and your insights.
Thank you, Richard, for the invitation, and thank you for listening to all the stories.
No, de nada. And when you, I will take you up on that. When you are next in Bogota, I want to stroll down the Calle 22 with you and meet some of the people who you filmed, and to hear that, how they, you know, feel as well about the project, because I think that would be interesting to hear their perspectives on what you did down there. Because it's one thing when you come from outside, but it's another thing from being on the inside.
No, perfect. Okay.
Perfect.
Take you there.
We've been talking to Roberto Uribe of calle22.org. This is episode 145 of Columbia Calling. If you want to get in touch, that's columbiacalling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook. I've been Richard McCall. This has been Columbia Calling. Thank you for listening.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.